Season 1, Episode 3. Today's guest, Monkey 47. But now let's get started with the most Juniper loaded show on the interwebs.
It's the Fabulous Gin Show. Jan Persil.
Welcome to the third episode of the Fabulous Gin Show, ladies and gentlemen. Today's guest is the global brand ambassador of Monkey 47, Axel Klobescheid, and he will tell us a lot about the history and backgrounds of the Monkey 47 gin, the distillery, and obviously, as we are in special edition season, we will be talking about this year's distiller's cut coming right from the distillery. There's so much to learn and hear, so let's get right to the interview. Axel, welcome to the Fabulous Gin Show, and great to have you here. And we have a special topic today, but some basic insights and behind the scenes information on a monkey that so many people love. We're talking about Monkey 47 today, and somehow you must be related to them. Maybe give us a quick introduction who you are and what you're doing and how you're related to Monkey 47.
Yes, first of all, thank you for inviting me to this talk here. I'm excited for the next few minutes or hours. Let's see how long we're going to talk. And I work for Monkey 47 for the last three and a half years now. I'm the global brand ambassador, so I'm representing the brand globally, working on events or on activations, bar trade shows, whatsoever stuff that a brand ambassador is doing. And before that, I actually worked mostly in hospitality businesses, mostly behind bars. And now I'm in front of the bar, actually, most of the time. And really enjoy working for Monkey 47 because it's such a creative brand. And you are pretty much welcome wherever you go because, I think the liquid inside the bottle actually delivers. And that's what a lot of people appreciate all over the world.
Very true. I mean, when you ask people, at least since we're both from Germany, which people can probably tell from our accents, but we actually said we'll leave the super hardcore German accent aside today. Actually, that's for others to judge. But as you say, at least in Germany, if you ask people what their favorite gin is, then probably a lot of people would mention Monkey 47 and say that's definitely the best best gin they know, that actually says a lot. I think if you actually ask really mainstream people which is their favorite gin, and that's quite an accomplishment for a gin brand which is basically a fairly young one compared to other brands who have fancy since 18 something on their bottles in comparison. Maybe you could give us a quick summary, because I can imagine that despite the fact that many people know Monkey 47 and probably pretty much everyone has tried it before, what the origins are and where Monkey 47 actually comes from, because there's that legendary founding story or where it comes from, but not that many people actually do know about it.
Yeah. Okay, let's start with our founder. His name is Alexander Stein. Alexander Stein in German, with a German accent, Alexander Stein. And he actually was back in the days around 2005, 2006. He was a Nokia manager in Detroit in the US. But he wanted to come back to his origins, and that is actually the Black Forest here in Germany. And he wanted to create something new. So he actually had, at this point, around 2006, the idea to produce an eau de vie that happens to be a gin. But he wanted also to include the roots of the Black Forest, like making very good eau de vies. But he wanted to create a German gin. which at that point in Germany wasn't existing. Nowadays, I think I read it yesterday or something, we have around 1,200 German gin brands. Yeehaw. Yeehaw. That's quite a lot. Yeah. But back then in the days, Alexander's idea was very unique and special. So, and since he was not, he didn't have a distilling background, he looked for a very good distiller, but also a very unique character. And he found Christoph Keller from Stehlemühle, and they actually teamed up and developed the recipe for around 2.5 years. I'm really putting this on top because I think it's a very long time developing a recipe. When you see, look at some gin brands that are, everywhere right now, or like popping up, I don't think anybody of them actually develops a recipe for 2.5 years. They don't have time for it right now. But back in the days, they took the time. And I think it's also an important thing when you talk about, or when you look at the presence that Monkey has right now. I think the liquid actually delivers quite much, and I think that's why it's so successful, because lots of stuff nowadays, it's okay, it's nice to look at, but at the end it must be the liquid inside that actually delivers. And it took them then around 2.5 years to develop the recipe, and then in May 2010 they actually launched the product Monkey 47. So this is a real short story of Monkey 47. And then it was a hard time in 2010 to bring out a gin, because there was no other gin. I think there were two other German gins on the market at that point that just came out. But the gin hype we see nowadays was still pretty far away. And they worked hard. For sure, Alexander, he was in a lucky position actually to be one of the first movers. But then he had his own strategy, and he followed that strategy until nowadays. And I think that was really clever what he did in this and this decision at that point of time. And at the end, everybody knows where Monkey is standing right now. It's in the best bars in the world. And we hope it stays like this, actually.
Great. So having developed the gin for such a long time, and that's probably one of the reasons why we got together here as well, not just because we have another reason to talk about, which is the distiller's card, which we'll come to a little bit later. As you mentioned, taking 2.5 years to develop something at a time when nothing was actually on the market yet, where it might have been easier to just get something out and say we are one of the first German ones, is probably one thing. And you compared it to gins today, and that is actually the reason why I actually started this podcast, because I think it's really important to talk about how gins are made, what's behind, as you say, the liquid, and what is actually happening there. Because we see, and the number you just mentioned early on is probably something we should have, dashboards like Corona infection dashboards for gin brands popping up, right? Because there's like daily cases and very often it's just a case of a brand, right? So someone who just goes down the street to the next available distiller and just asks for a gin, right? And just whacks on some nasty labels and says this is some weird botanical they might throw in there.
Exactly. I think we could do a gin together in between 2 months, I would say. So if we two say let's do a gin together from like day one till the end, till we have a finished product, I think it will take us not even 2 months, I guess.
Yeah, actually, I was just wondering what you plan to do in those 2 months. But
yes, that's true.
But yeah, we can have meetings. That's good.
Meetings are important.
But no, honestly, I think that's the important part. And I think as you touched on it at the beginning, what makes the difference of just getting a recipe, which is basically all there is. People kind of like buy from some distiller and just get like 1,000 bottles and try to make a bargain off of these 1,000 bottles and give away a few to a few people to write about it, and then hope that they sell everything at a very good margin. Because after all, alcohol is still kind of something where you can make money, and gin probably still having that premium compared to other spirits, where you sometimes wonder, why does gin get that premium? Well, yes, there is a hype, but when you compare it to other spirits who are which age and might even be a lot better and are being sold at half price, that's something where people sometimes don't understand why it takes so much time. Maybe we can just quickly talk about that, because getting a recipe and something distilled is one thing, but I mean, the 47 in Monkey 47 is not just a made-up number, right? It is basically, it shows how many aspects are within this gin, if you put it in a different way. So we're talking about the botanicals in this at this moment, for example.
Yeah. So, we have 47 ingredients in our gin. That's one reason why it's called Monkey 47. The other one is we have 47 ABV, because we think a good gin needs a little bit more higher ABV to actually transport aromas. But talking about the 47 ingredients, you just said it. Monkey 47 is a very complex, very aromatic gin. I think that's why it also fits very good in a gin and tonic, because has lots of aromas, and the tonic water doesn't overwhelm the taste of the gin, which happens also with some new Western gins nowadays somehow. But in our case, I think it's aromatic enough to actually stand against the tonic water and deliver taste. And what actually delivers taste in our gin is the ingredients. We take on the top level of our important list is actually the quality of the ingredients. When we talk about our base, neutral spirit is based on molasses, because we think in the first step, when we mix Monkey 47, the molasses with lingonberries, the molasses-based spirit actually kicks out the flavors, sweet and sour flavors of the lingonberries much, much better. That's why Alexander and Christoph decided at the beginning in their first recipe to use a molasses-based spirit and not a wheat-based spirit, because with a wheat-based spirit, you will always have the wheat flavor at the end. You will always have it. I don't say it's something bad or worse or good or better. I just say we do it different because we wanted to have that particular flavor at the end. And then we use a lot of citrus in our recipe, like we get our citrus fruits, mostly grapefruit and lemons from actually far away. And we just use the etheric oils of the ingredients of the citrus fruits. And then actually all the other 44 ingredients come into the game. So it's a lot of, I mean, I don't know all 47 ingredients, but I know quite some. The important one to name a few is definitely, we have a pepper mixture in there. In this pepper mixture, we have around 7 to 9 different kinds of peppers. That's why we come up to 47 at the end, because we have some mixtures in there which already include up to 10 ingredients. So we have definitely a peppery note in Monkey 47, a citrusy note, a fruity note that actually come from the first production step, the lingonberries, and we also put some slow berries in there. And then we have quite a floral character, which we get through lavender. And we use it once in our maceration extract, but also at the end when we come to distillation, we use it in a technique called steam extraction percolation, where we put a basket into the still, and that's where actually the alcohol vapors go through and actually where the more subtle aromas actually evolve. I think this is the reason why Monkey 47 actually smells a little bit floral, but doesn't taste too floral. I think that's what you get out of these percolation baskets we're going to use. So, and at the end, we have 47 ingredients altogether. We like to say it as an orchestra with 47 ingredients, 47 instruments. Sorry about this. And it's the same thing in an orchestra. When there's one guy who can't play the guitar or can't play the drums or something, the sound is not going to be good. And it's exactly the same thing when we talk about gin producing. If we have one ingredient that is missing or one ingredient that is not good, you will never have a good outcome. So that's why we like to compare it a little bit with an orchestra. Lots of different instruments, lots of different aromas, and at the end, it's a one big nice symphony.
Nice. I think the comparison is important there. If we use the orchestra as basically the picture we're talking about here right now, and coming back to this long development process, then it's probably exactly that, why it takes so long, right? Because you need to figure out how each and every component is actually behaving with the others. Basically, taking one out might change a lot for not just the final flavor, but actually the interaction between the different ones, right? And all
wanna
of a sudden...
Have an example for that?
Okay, go ahead.
Because we actually always like to tell the story, because it's a very good example on how hard the process of a recipe development is. Because then Alexander and Christoph developed the recipe and made macerations and distilled. And at the end of the distillation, what they tasted, they always had a very soapy character in their liquid. Said, oh, where's this coming from? So they tried this and that and this and that. And at one point, they actually exchange the fresh lemongrass to dried lemongrass. And at the end, the soapy character was gone. So they had to add several tries to find out that the soapy character comes from fresh lemongrass. If we use dried, it's not there anymore. So just to explain the process of developing a recipe and to find out, so, okay, I don't want this flavor, but where's it coming from? You know, and that's crazy. It must have been crazy times. I mean, they distill every day, macerate, blend with different liquids and stuff like this. And to come out at the end with one liquid, I think it's a very hard thing.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it, right? When you pour it into your glass, it's just a gin somehow, and one simply cannot grasp how many hours go into that if you really pay attention to the details, which, and that's the last time we'll touch on this, if you just buy a recipe or you just basically get something bottled where people simply don't know much about the craft, despite the fact that they are actually trained in distillation, for example, then... you will never ever be able to reach that level of quality, as a matter of fact. So I think that's where, and interestingly enough, in many talks that I had, or basically chats with people who distill, a lot of them who don't have a distilling background are way more into the details, as a matter of fact, than the people who come from a distilling background, sometimes for generations. I mean, there's always exceptions, and this is certainly not the best sample size I can produce here. But interestingly enough, they very often pay more attention to details because they pick up the stuff because they want to do it, and not because they somehow grew into it or just learned it as a standard is being taught at Distillers Academy or in the apprenticeship, which they might have just gone through. And it's amazing to hear how, to me, sometimes it feels like basic facts about distillation are not even known to a lot of distillers, for example. So... taking time, for example, or actually paying attention to how much time is being spent for, well, we talked about this here on the podcast already, how much time you take to marry the distillate with water, or how long you let it rest, etc. Things like that are very often simply not known. And if you just have these, well, let me call it accidents, like finding out that there's a dry or a fresh ingredient difference, which makes such a difference, then you simply won't figure it out if you just kind of say, yeah, I'm distilling this and I take four ingredients and that's it, right? So,
You're saying it, attention to detail. That's actually a word I've been using a lot when I show people around our distillery, because that's very important for Alexander Stein. If you look at our distillery rebuild the place, if you look at the bottle, the cork, the ring from Monkey 47, the stamp, like every little detail has a lot of attention. And for example, at the distillery, the fire extinguishers are not typically German in red, they are in chrome silver. He fought as long as he needed to get these fire extinguishers, because he said, these others don't fit in my distillery. They look stupid. And yeah, that's a little example for attention to detail when we talk about Alexander.
I can totally understand it. And luckily, he didn't choose a copper color for them, because then it would have been probably another 10 years, if at all. Nice. I'll just put some links in the show notes, and I think if people want to like browse throughout different aspects of what Monkey 47 is all about, I think the website which you have is quite interesting, because there's a lot of stuff on there. I mean, there's bars and restoration, restaurants, etc. on there, but there's a lot one can read and kind of figure out sometimes about just the details, as you said, and about the place itself. And even when you just need to follow Monkey 47 or people who just come to the distillery, it's always great to see these the four stills sitting there, and it's just a magnificent thing to look at. So I can totally understand why you don't want stupid, ugly red fire extinguishers sitting there, right?
It's actually very pretty. I was surprised by myself when I first came there. It's like, wow, I've actually never seen something like this before. Yeah. Because there's a lot of stuff that looks awesome, very pretty, but doesn't make the gin better, you know? But it's like about the overall experience you get when you come there.
Yeah, true. After all, it's a place where people need to work, right? One sometimes tends to forget that when you do a distillery tour and it looks so pretty, right? So when you visit Heyman's and it's almost like walking into a living room. Same thing, very, very pretty. Okay, where they told me that people are actually asking, so where do you make the gin? And they're like, well, here, these are the stills. This is not decoration. We actually do it here. So in these cases, I like the idea that it's open, that people can walk into a place like that, because it actually helps to understand the products and to learn about it. And I think that's basically what this interview and all these interviews will be all about, that people can understand more why certain things take time and why a gin which costs you $4.99 at the supermarket probably won't have that much attention to detail fulfill other purposes, let's put it that way. Okay, let's quickly have a look at, well, there's the iconic Monkey 47, the original one, which was there. Throughout the years, some other monkeys have been added, basically, to the monkey family. Maybe we'll quickly touch on that. There's the slow gin, which you have, which... is not actually a gin, but a liqueur. But anyway, it has the gin in there, so it qualifies for the magnificent show here.
Definitely. Yeah.
And you've got one very special one, which is only available at the distillery. Maybe that's a good teaser to talk about, so people can come and visit.
Yes, very good idea. So But the important thing is for every base, for every product we are producing, we use the base product, which is Monkey 47, our dry gin, because I mean, it took them so long to develop the recipe, and I think it's a good product. So why not use the base product for all the other ones? So talking about the slow gin, we use Monkey 47 and we macerate slow berries in there for a certain amount of time. And then we press it slightly. It's like a, I don't know if anybody has seen this, like a wine press somehow. So it's very easy and light pressing of the slow berries. And then we bring it down with water and we put some sugar in there to 29 ABV. And you can actually drink it pure, neat, because it's a very a little bit softer, or as a classic aperitivo with soda or sparkling wine or something like this. So this one works really good because it's a little bit more low ABV and it's quite fruity, like slightly bitter notes, but also because we put some sugar in there, a little bit sweet. But we put the lowest amount of sugar in there, so we are trying to keep it not so sweet like some other slow gins on the market. Then we have a barrel cut. This is quite a new product. So I think it's 1.5 years old now. We take, again, Monkey 47 and give it into mulberry casks, new mulberry casks. So there was nothing in there before, no whiskey, no sherry, no nothing. We let them build from a cask or barrel builder. Barrel builder, is that the right word? I don't know.
Maybe a cask maker, whatever.
Whatever. Everybody knows what I'm saying, I think. And we slightly toast these casks, these barrels, and then we leave the Monkey 47 in there for 180 days. So exactly a half year. And, the wood does his work and gives the gin actually quite some coloring and a lot of taste. And so this is like a barrel-aged Monkey 47. Well, I mean, a lot of other producers did it before us, but we thought let's make it take a special wood, which is mulberry, because it's a pretty rare wood. And not a lot of cask makers have been using it because it's a very strong hardwood, and it's actually pretty difficult to make a cask out of it. But we found somebody, and the final product is actually, you can drink it neat at room temperature, like whiskey or rum, and but also in like classic whiskey and rum cocktails, like in a Manhattan variation or something like this. Old fashioned works really good with this quality, or as I said before, drink it neat. Then we have in the distillery, which you were just announcing, our smokehouse cut. It's a very special product because we are working actually sustainable here. It's not our super specialty to be sustainable, but in this case, we use the old barrels from the barrel cut. We can use them twice. So we fill them twice, and after this, all the aromas, all the flavor is gone. So we make wood chips out of the barrels, and then we smoke actually our juniper berries with these wood chips. Smoke the juniper berries and then use them for our macerate. And this way, the smokehouse cut gets a little like a smoky character, not really smoky or peaty like a whiskey, but it goes into this direction. And that's very interesting because that's something we don't sell online or in the stores or in the hospitality business. We only sell it in our distillery. So whenever you have the chance to come to the Wild Monkey Inn, to the Monkey Distillery in 24 Höfe, you have the chance to buy a bottle. And we have some close bartender groups like every month one, and then but also we have some open public tours every Saturday. So if anybody's interested, if coming to Germany for holidays, make sure to drop by the Monkey Distillery and buy a bottle of smokehouse cut, because you can only get it there. It's super tasty.
Yes, actually I can attest to that. Great. So we've got that, and basically as a good lineup. Actually, one thing I was wondering is the slow gin, for example, is since I'm weirdly drawn towards slow gins. That's because that was my chance of not being a distiller, but starting to play around with it and making my own and trying things out and seeing how different amounts do work. So I totally understand the sugar limitation. One actually wants to get to the very bottom end. And sometimes I think a lot of people, me included, since I don't have to stick to any regulations, I can even go lower, which very often makes the product even better, as a matter of fact, because the sweetness is sometimes too high. It's just, if it wouldn't be 100 grams, but like 75, I think a lot of products might even work a little bit better. But well, I mean,
sure,
that's
with you.
Yeah. So, but that's how it is, and maybe things change later. But is that something in terms of your experience? I mean, you are, as Monkey 47, a global brand, which I don't want to say distorts things, but especially in Germany, for example, my feeling is that slow gins are still so unknown, and which is actually a pity, because there's, as you indicated, how much or how many different things you can do with them. But is that your experience as well, or how are the slow gins doing at the moment? Is that something that is still growing, or is it just something you need to have in your portfolio?
It's actually something that's very interesting to look at, because I don't think it's very much common in Germany to drink slow gin. Lots of my friends have not really something to do with a business. I show them and I said, wow, that's really nice and very good taste, but I never heard of it. And that's something I hear quite a lot. And so we decided maybe 2 or 3 years ago to take along the slow gin on all the trade shows, on everywhere we go, and trying to promote the slow gin a little bit more. And it's super successful. And like you said, I mean, it's a lot of people like the taste, but never heard of it. And so I think there's, well, in German we say Luft nach oben. There's quite some, how would you say this in English?
I'm not 100% sure, but there's definitely room to grow, right? In terms of the market share, the knowledge about it, yeah.
So, like I said before, the possibilities of mixing it or drinking it neat or doing drinks, a slow gin fizz is one of the best drinks you can ever have. Trust me, if you didn't have one, go for it next time you go to a bar. And very lots of possibilities to mix it and enjoy the taste, actually.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So interesting that you're basically trying to put this in the backpack as well, and really trying to more or less have it in the slipstream of the success of the Monkey 47 and kind of get it there. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, there's always the base of the Monkey 47, and I guess it's about time if we take a look at the clock and kind of try to keep this in the average commuter duration, which we're not talking about home office commuting times, because then we would be like a month worth of commuting times into it already for the time being. But there's this idea of the distiller's cut, which I don't know actually who started this distiller's cut idea. Is it actually, does it come from Monkey 47, or did you initiate it? It's been going on for a while, and sometimes one tends to forget. I couldn't recall what the first special distiller's cut edition was that I heard of.
Mm-hmm. So we started with, Alexander started, I wasn't there at that point. He started actually making a distiller's cut in the first year already. So 2010 is the first distiller's cut. So he actually, immediately when he came out with Monkey, he had the idea to do, I know he hates the word, but it is what it is. It is a limited edition. And but he doesn't like the word. That's why I'm saying it like this.
I'll bleep this out.
Yeah, no, you can leave it in. It's totally fine. He tells the story too, like this. And so he thought, let's make it something different. What does sound cooler? Oh, Distiller's Cut. That's great. That's a great name for it. So I haven't heard of a Distiller's Cut before Monkey 47, especially in the gin business. But I'm not 100% sure that he invented the word. I mean, like, I bet there's been something like this in the whiskey business before, rum maybe. But for the gin market, I'm pretty sure that he was a first mover. And well, nowadays there are quite some few Distiller's Cuts on the market. The idea actually behind it was to make a special release, let's say, not the bad word. But again, I mean, like, if you look at the history of spirits, I mean, like, talking about like maybe Absolut Vodka, which I used to work for too, they have limited editions for like ages, you know. So it's not the brand new idea or something, but it was an idea to do something special and actually to give something back to the bartenders. That was his idea for the Distiller's Cut. So he wanted to produce a small amount of bottles with a very particular and particular and special taste, and to give it to good clients, to good customers, as a present, actually. And not really resell it and make thousands of dollars in money for it, but to give something back to the bartender. So that was the idea behind the Distiller's Cut. And he was always looking for a special ingredient which you could actually put in a story, because selling gin is also a lot storytelling, which I bet all of you know. Every gin has a story. So he looked for special ingredients, and he tried to make it a little bit more dominant. Again, he took the Monkey 47 as a base product, but then looked for an ingredients. Sometimes he distilled it with the base product. Sometimes he macerated it. Sometimes he put it in this basket. It depends on the ingredient he actually used for the last 10 Distiller's Cuts now. And he wanted to make it a little bit more, definitely different than a Monkey 47, because that would be too easy, like just to twist it a little bit. No, it had to fit into the whole aroma profile of Monkey 47. And he did several kinds of fruits, herbs, spices in the last years. And I think this year we come out in beginning of October with the best one we ever made.
Okay, interesting. So by the time people can hear this, it will be out. Maybe a thing to quickly mention. I mean, there is a history of, and you touched upon it, and we won't say the nasty word, but the problem with these distiller cuts is actually that they tend to get to the point where it's almost absurd, right? When you look at the history of what you were just talking about, that a majority of these bottles get never opened, that they just simply get resold, they change hands several times depending on what the eBay buying and selling ratio is like. It's it's almost like being on the stock market, which is probably one of the reasons why it's not really loved. And I mean, you had a lot of let me put it that way, turbulence from basically, is it a community? I don't know. Or the customers? I mean, you took things kind of in your own hands to a certain degree, because there has been a lot of this going on, and probably with people just buying in quotation marks or air quotes too many and just stockpiling these, right, in order to resell it. Is that something which will be happening this year again as well, or in terms of?
Yeah, it's like I said, first and beginning, it was a tool actually to say thank you to all good customers, and then kind of things got weird because some clients got more bottles, and it was actually Alexander's decision who gets more, and then next year they get less, and then they're angry. And yeah, like you said before, lots of trouble, especially for us, that angry people standing in front of me at Bar Convent Berlin and cussing at me and saying, why didn't I get a bottle this year? And I said, hey, this is the same chance for everybody. And that's why we developed this system, same chance for everybody in the world, that we do like an online raffle.
Yeah,
I think we started 2 years ago, yeah, with the online raffle. And this way, I think it's super fair at the end, because everybody has a chance to get one bottle. And maybe if you're super enthusiastic and you can actually get two bottles, maybe if you have two different IP addresses. And I don't want to give any tips right now, but it is possible to get two bottles, but it's not possible to get six bottles or 12.
Yeah.
And this way, we are trying to cut it down a little bit on the high eBay prices, because that's something he never intended to do, Alexander. He has nothing from it, actually, maybe a little bit fame or something like this. But at the end, we sell it for our price, which is always the same thing.
Yep.
To our clients, to our customers on the online raffle. And this year we're going to do actually a distiller's cut tour through Europe, through 12 cities. And we sell it for the normal price. And everybody has a chance to queue up, register, and get a bottle. But only one bottle. So that's what we are trying to do right now. It works out quite well in the last 2 years, actually, to cut down this business of actually, I mean, like, it's everybody's free mind to not open the bottle. I mean, you can put it in your cupboard and just leave it there and look at it. But actually, at the end, this liquid is made for drinking. That's what some people actually might forget sometimes. But like I said, at the end, everybody can do with the bottle what he wants. And I opened up most of my distiller's cuts I have, so because I think it's interesting in tasting, and yeah, that's what they're made for at the end.
Yeah, I think it's sad that these approaches have to be taken, but personally, it's probably the best way of making it work that way, and at least getting these hoarders to well, kind of make it really hard on and getting them, and just basically creating a second market for it, which is as you said, is not what it's all about. But maybe we just move over to the nicer aspects of distiller's cuts and talk about this year's one, which I heard it's supposed to be the best one so far. Someone told me.
That's what somebody says. Yeah, yeah. It's the best one we ever made. No, it actually, it came out really good. And this year, now I can announce it, since it's out in the market already. And it is actually, we put monkey, the special ingredient is a wood. Mitsunara wood. Mitsunara, some people might know, it's a cask from Japan. And it's actually translated, Mitsunara means water, oak. And we put, Alexander always wanted to have these casks, these Mitsunara casks. And at one point, he got hold of five of them. Really big casks, and hard to get, pretty expensive. But at one point, he got those, and then he, whatever he does with cask, when he gets them, he puts monkey in there and looks what happens. So that's it was kind of an experiment first. And so this year's distiller's cut is Mitsunara cask. And yeah, it's very smooth, very elegant taste, a lot different to our mulberry cask we actually have the barrel cut with. But Mitsunara has a different taste. It's like lots of, I don't know if you know the history of Mitsunara. It's kind of like a hybrid in between the European and the American oak. So European oak is very, has lots of tannins, and it's quite bitter and stuff like this. American oak is more like vanilla taste and stuff like this. So, and what they say, the Mizanara is like a very nice mix of both of them. And there's also some special molecule, I think it's called lignin or something, and it gives quite a taste of coconut to the liquid. And that's actually the three main aromas in our this year's distiller's guide. It's lots of vanilla, quite a bitter note, but also the sweetness from the vanilla. And we quite have some coconut in our Monkey 47 this year, which is really exciting because I never tasted that before in a Monkey 47. And I have to admit, I do like coconut. And so for me, it's actually, yeah, the best one we ever made.
Nice. Great. So that is something which has been quite a while in the making, basically, if you say there's been this hunt for the barrel. How long is the, does the gin, or not does, how long did it actually rest in the yes. casks?
We decided to go again for 6 months, mm-hmm. like the mulberry cask, because it was an experiment, and after 6 months we were pretty satisfied with the final product. And so we took it out, and now I found my notes here. The casks are 450 liter. I missed that out before.
All right.
And it's a fresh oak. And like I said before, it's a mix out of between two different kind of oaks. And the lowest, before you can cut a Mizunara tree, it has to be 200 years old.
Wow. Okay.
So this way, you can imagine that Mizunara wood is pretty rare, and it's also not very common and used in the cask business again, because it's the name is water oak, and it's very how do you say it in English? There's lots of water in the oak, and this way it's not really. How do you say it, tight. So sometimes it leaks, actually. So it happens almost to every cask. So you have to fill it up again with a fruity paste to actually make it not leak anymore. So it's very, you have to work on your casks quite a lot. And that's another reason why there is not so many Mizunara casks around. It's mostly been used in the whiskey business, mostly Japanese whiskeys, but also, like, for example, I remember Chivas did an awesome Mizunara cask whiskey. And yeah, it gives quite a very nice taste if you handle it the right way.
Mm-hmm. So the casks you used for the distiller's cut this year were probably fresh casks, or were they pre-used?
Yes.
All right.
They were fresh casks, so nothing was in there before.
Yeah. Okay, great. So what is the amount of bottles that will come out of it? You said 450 liters. That makes probably something like 1,000 plus bottles at max, depending on how much you lose. I mean, half a year, there's quite a bit of angel share, I guess, in terms of especially with a cask that leaks something. That's not that much, is it?
No, it is definitely not. But now you nailed me with a question I actually cannot answer right now.
Because, it doesn't matter. By the time
I don't know. I'm always honest. I need to check again with our production manager how many bottles he actually could fill.
Okay.
So actually, don't know.
We'll put it in the show notes by the time this is published. This
then
is
a good... we will definitely know.
Exactly.
We do know now, but I don't know. So
no problem. That makes it a little bit limited in terms of the information right now, and people actually have a chance to check out the show notes, which are actually always connected to the episode. So there's a good chance to do that.
Perfect.
And probably a good idea at this point, since we're talking about that. So if you're listening to this on your mobile or whatever player, then you will be able to click on it, and there will be a link at this very moment to take you over to the product or to the online raffle, depending on where you're being redirected. So I'll put that in so people have a chance to jump over and either participate in the raffle or at least read more about it. So we'll see whichever link makes the most sense by the time people listen to this. Great. Wonderful. So yeah, again, quite a different thing after the last couple of years. So yeah. As you said, ever changing to some extent, and probably just like many other industries. Like, I don't know, when the new iPhone comes out, usually the engineers are already busy working on the next one. And I can imagine, especially with products like this one, which just needs time again, you can't come up with an idea like that 4 weeks before that.
So we're already working on next year's Stylus Cut to quasi answer your question. And we have all lots of other stuff in the making. I don't know if you have heard about our Experimentum series.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
we're actually launching. Right before the Distiller's Cut, we're going to launch our new Experimentum series. Mm-hmm. And well, in this case, when we talk about these liquids, the Experimentums, it's something really awkward most of the time. Mm-hmm. So we like to work with cities or countries together and to make something together with them that is actually a specialty in their country. So the first one we did was at Japan, and we did a Kobe beef infusion with Mangi 47. It's actually not the classic way of distilling gin. That's why we call it Experimentum Series. Yep. Because it's really experimental stuff, and it's maybe even sometimes it's not the main flavor is not juniper anymore. Mm-hmm. But that's why we say it's Experimentum, and so we can actually go a little bit crazy here. The second one was with Belgium, and we fermented mussels and wheat beer and actually redistilled that and mixed it up and blended it, and yeah, it came out amazingly. I was like, mussels in a gin, why? why would you do this? And then I tried it when Alexander made it, and I was super surprised, because the taste was something, like I said, awkward, but really, really good. And yeah, you can look forward. So we're gonna have some more crazy ideas from Mangi. It never gets boring working for Mangi 7, I can tell you this. And I hope also it never gets boring to drink it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, and especially with special editions coming out and basically having a background where there's not just a story to it, but rather actually a change in taste at least once a year. I mean, most people would probably never buy a special edition or a distiller's cut or whatever you want to call it if they wouldn't be more into gin, usually. Yeah. I mean, people usually don't pick it up and say, why is this bottle so expensive? That's just like you never pick up like a $100 whiskey bottle if you have no idea about whiskey, I guess. But for seeing these ones coming out is interesting. And I think it says a lot about how you approach products, because in the end, yeah, you could just chuck it out in gallons and just keep things as they are and do some cool marketing. But it actually, in your case, showcases a little bit what the background is, despite the fact that it's, as you said, it's like in bars all over the planet, which amazingly is all still produced at your headquarters, right? So there's no other distilleries. As far as I know, but you can prove me wrong there.
No, that's 100% right. Yeah. And also, because a lot of people always ask me, oh, can you still make so much liquid to cover the whole world? And but Alexander's opinion is not really to scale up production or something. He wants to make a perfect product, with the best quality ingredients. And we are not scaling up and making millions and thousands of liters. We want to keep the quality. And maybe in some countries around the world, there is some shortage to get Monkey 47 at one point, because we cannot deliver every market in the world with unlimited amounts of bottles. But we say for us, if it is like that, it is like it. And we produce the amount we can produce. We are not at the limit, but very close to. And that way, it's just... it's a limited amount of bottles we can produce, and we will stick to this, and we will not build a new distillery and or scale up production to minor product, minor quality. That will never happen, because that was not Alexander's intention.
Yeah, that's usually the thing where brands start to, well, not die, but lose basically their DNA, right?
Yeah. Also, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And then people come in with the Excel sheet and say, well, it's 47 botanicals. Can we just get like 7 out? That would save us like 200,000 a year. And yeah. It's, good idea.
good idea, but we don't do it.
No. Yeah. No, I think that's, to be honest with you, having shortage in terms of, because there is no more and you don't scale up, or sometimes because there's not more of an ingredient. I mean, in the case of the distiller's cut, if there's no more casks or barrels to put the stuff in, then there is no more. And yes, that raises the desirability of the product, obviously, and you get again to these black market situations. But essentially, I mean, that's what we're facing basically everywhere on the planet, right? Because if I chat to my friend Belinda from Australia, for example, she has apparently, and I trust her on that, amazing gins, right? Which I will never be able to try here unless we kind of set up that proper smuggler's route, which we're, I don't know, I'm not supposed to talk about that, but you know, basically you need to go over there. And I think there's a certain charm to that. We walk into cities which all look the same, right? There's different buildings, and they might be a few hundred years old, but essentially in the end, it's always the same stores and the same fast food places. And so it's good that there is limitations and things are still connected and authentic and really just in a certain amount. And when it's gone, it's gone. That's it. And Wonderful. Well, I'm looking at the clock or the timer here. I think it's, we could probably go into more depth and chat for hours longer, but usually...
Well, yeah, I could tell you a few more stories about Monkey,
Let's use that as a cliffhanger, because I don't know, maybe it's the next distiller's cut or something else where we connect again. Maybe it is something where we get together for something else. There's this other project I'm doing, which is this is a shameless self plug here in the making, which is liquorlabs.tv, which will not just focus on gin, obviously, but other spirits as well. But maybe that is something to get together and see how certain distillation ideas come into place and chat over there and see what's going on. But keep this kind of like at a length which people can still download without breaking their data caps. Thank you very much for the time. It's a great insight into where Monkey 47 comes from and knowing a little bit more about it. And I think one gets the idea that there's more to it than just a fancy made-up marketing story, but that it actually has a different background. And yes, we've just touched the surface, but I think it's really interesting to see that even despite the fact that there can be success, there's still dedication to certain aspects of the product and still paying attention to detail and actually using the power of maybe even the success of the brand to become better and as you said, I think the example of fire extinguishers is, even if it's not connected to the gin and it doesn't make the gin better, it goes a long way in order to show how much someone can be dedicated to it. And I'm pretty sure that is the same for the team, because usually people gather around with the same attitude. So hope people got a good insight. Thanks a lot for giving us some little anecdotes here and a little bit insight into the 2020 Distiller's Cut. And I hope that people get to taste this even while we are talking and zipping the first bit while they listen to this.
We will be on tour through Europe, like I said before. You can check the tour dates on our homepage, and should be everywhere. So if whenever you have the chance, I will be on the whole tour. So whenever you have the chance, come by, and hopefully you get a bottle, and then we can have a little chat and also a little drink maybe.
Perfect. And if all they right. mention the secret code word, which is, what is it? Cut the Distill. Then they, you know that they've been listening to this.
Perfect.
We should do it. Probably take something more awkward, but I'll put it in the show notes at this very point. So if you see that and pass that on to Axel, then he knows you are a listener and you've actually made it all the way through the episode. Perfect.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good idea.
Axel, thank you very much again, and take care. And I'll put the information about your tour into the show notes as well, so people have a chance to meet you, and hopefully it will all take place, despite the fact that, well, events and gatherings are not the easiest thing right now. So stay safe, stay all healthy, and catch you very soon.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye. Cheers.
Thank you.
So many details about that famous monkey, right? That's actually awesome to hear all the background information about a gin brand so many people know, and yet there's so many things probably a lot of you didn't know about. So great. If you are a gin maker and have a lot of stuff to talk about, have your story to be heard, basically, get in touch, and I'm happy to have you here on the Fabulous Gin Show. If you are a listener, I'm more than happy to get your feedback as well. Did you like it? What else would you like to hear in the future, when we've got distillers, makers, basically people related to gin on the show? What's missing? What's too much? Let me know. If you like the show, tell your friends and promote the show. Maybe even leave an iTunes review or a review somewhere else. I'm more than happy to read what you've got to say. And hey, actually, I have a t-shirt here, which is a special edition t-shirt just for subscribers or listeners to the show, and whoever leaves a review has a chance to win that. I'll be announcing that in a couple of weeks, so you've got plenty of time to leave your review. There's not much more for me to say, except for more details on the website, gin.show. If you like it, subscribe. If you don't, keep it to yourself, or tell your friends if you liked it, which would really help as well. And don't be shy, if you're a distiller, get in touch as well. I'm more than happy to have you on the show. Catch you in the next one. Cheers, and gin zelebin. Is that Gin Mops throwing a Monkey 47 bottle up into the air? Whoa!